Thank you for listening to a River Life Fellowship podcast. We're a church family in North Carolina with a vision for people to experience the grace of Jesus, be filled with the Father's love, and to release the power of the Holy Spirit. Here's this week's message from Wilmington.
Awesome. Well, I was thinking about today's message, and I used to be in the restaurant business, and I actually thought I was going to be and go into the restaurant business, and who knows, someday maybe I still will, but the Lord kind of talks to me through the spiritual language of food sometimes, and sometimes I thought about, well, first of all, the Lord one time told me, I was like, God, why do people show up to church? I was sitting in church. I was like, why do people show up week after week after week and, you know, listen to people talk? And I mean, the worship thing is great. That makes good sense. Thanks, Alan. That was really good this morning. Just gathering together and worship. Like, we can't corporately worship by ourselves, you know? And so I love that about gathering. We just get to corporately worship with our brothers and sisters. And whether it's in this building or out at the park or at somebody's home, I love corporate worship. And I was like, Lord, why do people gather? And he's like, well, because they're hungry. I was like, oh, hungry. And then a little while later, the Lord was telling me to feed his sheep. I was like, well, Lord, I don't know. Well, actually, it was when he was convincing me that I was going to be the pastor of River Life Wilmington. And honestly, this is how the story went down. And I was like, Lord, I don't know if I can be a pastor. And he's like, feed my sheep. I was like, oh, I can feed people. I love to feed people. And, you know, Mary and I we literally love to feed people. We love to have people over and feed people. But the point is, like, I got some food today for you. And the great thing about feeding people, especially when you're feeding people at your house, is the food can be, like, last night we made this new crazy Greek recipe that we'd never tried, some gluten-free naan bread that turned purple because of the psyllium husk that we used. I don't know. It was purple, non gluten-free, but it was delicious. And we took a jump and we took a risk. And sometimes food's like that. Sometimes you put some food on the table that it's a little bit of a risk, right? Sometimes you put some food on the table that's just good. It's fast food because that's what you had time to give. So I don't know. I don't know what kind of food I'm putting on the table today, but it's food. And if you're hungry, I invite you to eat. How about that? So if we have ears, let us hear, Lord, right? So we're in the middle of a vision series for those of you that have been joining us from time to time and in the middle of a vision series. And our vision, which I'll just state, is as a corporate, our corporate vision, River Life Wilmington, to host a diverse church body, diversity is on our heart, that encounters the love of the Father, sorry, the love and presence of the Father, grace of Jesus, and indwelling of the Holy Spirit. And those encounters lead us to radically changed and filled lives, and a people who are activated into their identity and callings and carry the presence and kingdom of God into the city of Wilmington and beyond. It's a lot. We intentionally packed a ton in there because we feel like the Lord's got a lot for us. And the last couple weeks, we've been talking about that idea of, okay, we encounter the Lord, so what? We encounter the Lord because those encounters lead to radically changed and filled lives. And they lead to a people, we believe that's us, who are filled with their identity. In the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about identity. I did not tell our founding pastor, Byron, who was here last week, that we were talking about identity. And he shows up and talks about identity, which was great. And we've been talking about our identity as sons and daughters, and we've been talking about our identity as the bride of Christ. And today, I want to take that next step that we are transformed and activated into not only our identity, but our callings. So today I want to start talking about callings. And I actually think I want to talk about this place where I think identity and calling kind of overlaps, if you would, or runs parallel. How's that sound? Sounds fun? I didn't know if I was going to tell this story or not, but a lot of us in this room are believers, and Charlie, how long? Who was a believer first, you or Luann? Yeah, I figured. And how long, Luann, have you been a believer? I think, I'm thinking, that's the longest tenure in the room. Right? Because I knew you grew up, well, that you guys got saved, you're early in life. And I was thinking about sometimes the food that we put on the table is just foundational, right? So I'm going to tell this quick story. There was a coach in football called Vince Lombardi. I don't know if you know who Vince Lombardi is. If anybody has watched the Super Bowl, that trophy that they hold up that has the big football on it, they pass around, that's called the Lombardi Trophy. So he's a historical guy that goes way back. He used to coach the Green Bay Packers. In 1961, the Green Bay Packers played the Philadelphia Eagles. I think it was the Philadelphia Eagles. It was the Eagles for sure. And I believe they were still in Philadelphia at the time, in what was called the NFL Championship game. They didn't have a Super Bowl back then. So Lombardi predates the Super Bowl. And the Green Bay Packers lost to the Philadelphia Eagles that year. So flash forward to the next year, they're in training camp. There was 36 people on the team, 36 players. And you play, for those of you, I won't go into the depth of that, but that probably means people were playing both ways. They were playing offense and defense, right? This was back probably leather helmet era, right? And these were professional football players. Like, this is what they did for their life. And back then, it was before the whole Moneyball and trade agreements. And like, if you were a Green Bay Packer, you're a Green Bay Packer for your life. Like, that's what you were doing, right? So Vince Lombardi shows up as the coach, a respected coach. His team just went to the biggest game of the season. He shows up to training camp with all these professional football players. And Vince Lombardi walks in the room with a football and he says, "Gentlemen, this is a football." That's how he started training camp. Reminding his team that it was a football, and then getting back into the fundamentals of blocking and tackling, the X's and O's, right, as so to speak. And that story's always grabbed a hold of me as this idea of, isn't it important in our life to just go back to the basics, like to go back to the fundamentals and to remind ourselves of the things that are the most important things. I mean, if it's important enough for, I thought, you know, a professional player, of course they know what a football is. So I don't know. Today my message might be a little bit like, this is a football. We'll see. Let's jump to Matthew. I'm going to kick off in Matthew. I'll give you a second to turn there or to get your device there if you have a device. Matthew chapter 16. In Matthew chapter 16, verses 13 through 19. This is an interesting, some of the chapters before this, Jesus had been doing some miraculous signs. He'd been calling out Pharisees. He had already fed 4,000 and 5,000. So he had done both of those large feedings of people. And he was calling out, trying to talk to the disciples about the yeast of the Pharisees. And they didn't really get it. And in this story in Matthew 16, in chapter 13, he's starting to ask the disciples about who they think he is, right? So I'm just going to read it. Chapter 16, verses 13 through 19. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" "Well," they replied, "some say John the Baptist, some say Elijah, and others say Jeremiah, or one of the other prophets." And then he asked them, "Right, but who do you say I am?" Simon Peter answered, "Well, you're the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And then Jesus replied, "You're blessed, Simon, son of John, because my Father in heaven has revealed this to you. You did not learn this from any human being. Now I say to you that you are Peter," which means rock. "And upon this rock, I will build my church, and all the powers of hell will not conquer it. And I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you forbid on earth will be forbidden in heaven, and whatever you permit on earth will be permitted in heaven." This is a really interesting story. I think there's a lot that's in here. But one of the things I want to focus on is this idea that Jesus asks the disciples, like, "Who are people saying I am?" Right? And a lot of the people are saying what they hear the world saying of Jesus at that time. "You're a prophet," right? And when he says, "Yeah, but who do you say I am?" Peter's response, he gets it, right? And we hear that the Lord revealed it to Peter, that he said, "Yeah, you're the Messiah, you're the Messiah. And then Jesus goes on to talk to Simon Peter about his life. And it's interesting to me, I'm gonna jump back to that in just a second. The first thing that Jesus does is he says, Simon, son of Jonah, or John, or if you have a translation that says Simon bar Jonah, which means the son of Jonah or John, depending on the translation of the name. Jesus had already changed Peter's name. That happened when he first called him. This was not Jesus changing Peter's name to Peter, Simon to Peter. Jesus already did that. Like if you go back in Matthew, it says Simon called John. If you go read in John early, I think it's chapter 1 somewhere, he said, that's when actually Jesus immediately said to Peter, or to Simon at the time, I'm going to change your name to Peter. So this is interesting. He says to Simon, he calls him by his actual worldly name, Simon, son of Jonah. That's who he was born as. He was born son of John. Make sense? And then he says, he changes it. In the middle of it, he mixes that and then goes right at, and you are Peter, which means rock. He reminds Peter of who he is in Christ. Does that make sense? He reminds Peter that he has something else for Peter than what the world called him. Actually, I think it's kind of interesting. It parallels what Jesus was asking the disciples. That Jesus asked the disciples, who does the world say I am? And the world says that Simon was the son of John. The world said that Simon was the son of John. And then he said, yeah, but who do you say I am? And then Jesus says, oh, you're Peter. It's kind of an interesting parallel to me. Excuse me. So he reminds Peter of who he really is. In my mind, that's kind of like saying, this is your identity. Peter, you are the rock. You're the rock. You're not the person that you used to be. You're the person that I say you are. And then he goes on to say, and here's the things that you're going to do. Does that make sense? He says, I'm going to build my church on you. He said, I'm going to give you the keys to the kingdom. The powers of hell won't conquer it. Whatever you forbid on earth will be forbidden in heaven. And whatever you permit on earth will be permitted in heaven. He goes on to unlock, I think, Peter's calling. It's interesting. So let me put this together. Peter saw who Jesus was. Peter was reminded of his identity. And then Peter was launched or told about his calling. That so far so good? I think that means when we see who he is, we can see who we are. And then we can do the things we were called to do. Right? I think that's important. Because I think what we try to do a lot of times in life is do the things that we feel like we're called to do. And we forget to ground ourselves in who he is and who we are in him. So far, so good. And as a side note, by the way, what you do is not who you are. I think our world confuses that a lot, right? I know Kylie is going through this. Sorry, Kylie, I didn't ask your permission to share this, but I won't talk about you. Some young people who are seniors in high school that are going into college that are attractive and really nice and love the Lord and sweet and love their father further. You know, they're like bombarded with these questions like, what are you doing? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Oh, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? As if what you're going to do is who you are. Now, I know people are just being nice. Like, people are just trying to strike up conversation. Because what if, you know, what do you have a conversation with if you're trying to talk to an 18-year-old girl? I don't know. What are you doing? What are you going to do next, right? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? It's, you know, people meet you. You meet people as adults. Hey, how are you? Great. What do you do? That's one of the first questions. What do you do? Oh, I'm in software or whatever, right? I'm a farmer. I'm a teacher. I'm in hardware. Totally. But I think I think as a industrialized, you know, country, that's part of who we are. We think it's part of who we are. What we do, we think is tied up to who we are. And the reality is it's not. You are not what you do. You are who you are. You are who you are in the Lord. Is that okay? I didn't really get that early in my life because I thought that I grew up on a farm and I was like, it was always like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with your life? And I think I spent a lot of my life trying to figure out what I was supposed to do. I swear I have more stories, but I know some of you, the last time you were in this room, heard me tell some of this story. So I just want to preface it by, I have other stories. This one just happens to be a lot about my identity and calling. But I told some of you this story about how I wrestled with the Lord when I was younger. I was college. I just dropped out of college. I'd gone to the University of Iowa, go Hawks. And then that didn't really work out for me first semester. So I transferred to a community college. And several, maybe months, I don't know if I made it months, weeks for sure. And then I decided to drop out of college. And my parents didn't know, and I think they might not have known for about 10 or 15 years after that. But anyway, I dropped out of college, and I was in this place where I was like, Lord, what am I supposed to do? Like, what am I supposed to do with my life? Anybody relate? And I found myself crying out to the Lord. This is the part of the story that I think some of you have heard before, and I really wanted to go into acting because I was fairly good at it and thought that might be fun. And a lot of my friends were telling me, oh, yeah, that's what you should do. Like, they were feeding this as part of my identity. And I was, frankly, probably found a lot of my identity in the performing arts because, you know, when I was to get up in front of people and perform and then they said, good job, I felt probably like I was good, right? Oh, like, wow, I'm getting so much praise. It's like when I used to hold the door for old ladies at church, you know, and they'd say, oh, you're such a nice boy. I was like, oh, I'm a nice boy. When I help people, I'm a nice boy, right? And then I became a people pleaser. I blame it on the old ladies. I'm just kidding. But you know what we do sometimes gets padded and encouraged and stoked, and then all of a sudden we feel like it's who we are. So I decided, Lord, I'm going to go into theater. I want to be an actor. And I felt like the Lord was actually calling me into ministry. So I was also really active in our church. I was a volunteer, and I felt like the Lord was calling me into ministry. And so again, the story that some of you have heard is that over back and forth all night, I said, Lord, I want to be an actor. And he said, I want you to be in ministry. Lord, I want to be an actor. I want you to be in ministry, over and over and over for hours. I was bawling, like ugly crying. Finally, I said, okay, Lord, I quit. I don't know enough about myself. I don't even know what I'm supposed to do. So put me in a place where I can learn more about you so I can decide what I'm going to do about myself, right? That was actually kind of a miracle moment because who connects those things? It was like God dropped it in my spirit and I didn't even know it. I didn't know it until I looked back on it. And then I realized, oh, God actually planted that. I need to know more about you, God. Does that make sense? It was like in the middle of trying to figure that out, he just revealed it. But it's consistent with what we just read in Matthew, right? Peter was going to get commissioned to do his calling, but he needed to first know who the Lord was. And so it's kind of commissioned, or it's kind of consistent with that. I was trying to skip some steps and get to what I was supposed to do. Does that make sense? Well, I don't know that I have it all figured out. The Lord's taken me down a path. That was 28 years ago. I did the math. 28 years ago. In my younger life, when I was thinner and married and kids, I'm still married and I still have kids. The kids were younger and I was thinner. Those were the big differences. Yeah, and I was maybe not as mature. And I feel like in that phase of my life, I was still trying to figure this thing out. So even the Lord had invited me into getting to know him, which he was taking me on a journey to do so. I was learning about him. I was learning who I was in him. I was learning who I was as a son, as a bride. I was learning those things. And early on in my life, I told you guys the story when I was speaking about the Bride of Christ, how I went through a terrible time of depression in my life. When I thought that Mary wasn't good enough for me. And it led me down this like dark night of my soul where I was mad to other people. I was irritable. I didn't like myself really. And I felt like, how could I be good enough for this woman who has the perfect parents? and who, you know, loved the Lord, and she was beautiful and all these things. I just didn't feel like I measured up or earned, like had ever earned that love, if that makes sense. And the Lord revealed to me through like conversations with my brother that his plan for me included Mary. So therefore I was good enough, right? I was good enough because I'm, first of all, we can unpack that later. It's not about what we do anyway. It's about who we are. That qualifies us. We're good enough because of what Jesus did for us, not because of what we do for ourselves. And oh, by the way, as Christians, the same thing that got us in keeps us in. Guess what got us in? The goodness of Jesus. Jesus died on the cross for us. His grace got us in. And that's the same thing that keeps us good. We don't have to get better and do better. After we get saved, it's not like there's a demand that comes on us, right? Okay, any rate, I digress. But the point of the story is, God had already pulled me through that revelation. And because I talked about that previously, I just want to connect the timeline. So I had this major encounter when I was 28. The Lord really did draw me into getting to know more about himself. He was unlocking things about my own identity, how I was loved by him. But I was still finding myself in this place where I felt like a longing to do the things that I was called to do. I was trying to figure out what it was. And for about every, I'd say 12 to 18 months, 24 at the most, never more than 24, I found myself in this cycle of being like dry and feeling tired and feeling like I didn't know what I was doing and feeling like not motivated and, ugh, what am I doing in this job? It felt like a dead end, like cycle, cyclical. Mary could set her watch by it. I'm serious. And I'd come to her and I'd be like, babe, I just don't know. Maybe I should quit my job. She's like, oh, let's see. Yep, it's been 18 months. Of course you feel that way, you know? It's just like these cycles of through and through and through. And because I felt like I wasn't doing the things that I was called to do, but I didn't feel like the Lord was calling, like pulling me into something else. I was just like living life. In 2008, we were living in Houston. And we were going to this church, and the pastor at the time, I don't even remember what his message was about, but he read Proverbs 29:18, and I'll just read it. I'm actually going to read it in the King James Version. He read it. He said, where there is no vision, the people perish, but he that keepeth the law, happy is he. I read it in the King James Version because that's how the version that I heard it in. Like he was a King James Version pastor. Where there is no vision, the people perish. And I was like, that's it. I just don't have a vision. I don't have a vision for my life. Oh, awesome. I can figure that out. Lord, what's your vision for my life? Maybe I've been asking the wrong questions. Lord, what's your vision for my life? And he told me the answer. Do you want to hear the answer? He said, I'm your vision. I was like, oh. Like, it felt like such a Sunday school answer. I was like, that's not really fair, Lord. Like, what am I supposed to do with that? I'm your vision? Come on, really? It felt like, of course, but also like blow my mind at the same time. You know what I mean? But for years after that, the Lord was showing me, no, I am your vision. Fix your eyes on me. Set your eyes on me. And for years after that, I still found myself coming back to this place where every 12 to 18 months or so, I'd be like, Lord, all right, what's my vision, Lord? What's your vision? And he'd say the same thing. I'm your vision. Over and over again. Lord, okay, I might be coming into a new season in my life. This job is wrapping up. I'm getting ready to step into it. Lord, what's your vision? I mean, I am your vision. Okay, all right, I get it, right? I come back to that season again. Lord, what's your vision for me? Jesus. It's like, oh, he shortened his answer. It's like he's tired of the conversation. Jesus. He wasn't really tired of the conversation, but he was reminding me about what my vision should be. Everybody okay so far? Years later, the Lord helped me to connect the dots a little bit further. Let's turn to Hebrews. Hebrews 12. This is right after the great chapter of the heroes of faith. Hebrews 12, verses 1 and 2. My version says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. And let us run with endurance the race God has set before us. We do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. Because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and now is seated in the place of honor beside God's throne. If our life is a race, if our race is our calling, then how do we win? We win it by setting our eyes. It was like a moment. I was like, oh, there it is. As if I had to get God to prove in scripture to what he was saying to me was true. You are our vision. God, there it is. Jesus as our vision, right? It was like he was making it clear to me, this thing that he had been telling me all along. I used to be a runner, and I'd run quite some distances. Believe it or not, I've run a marathon. I've run like 2 half marathons. Yeah, here's what's funny. Here's what I learned about the Lord. When it says he who judges does the same thing or doeth the same thing, it's totally true. I used to make fun of people who ran. Like, I would openly mock people who ran. And then I one day became a runner. And one day I was running. I was like, oh, I used to make fun of people like me, like out in the snow running. Any rate. What I learned about running is that you really do have to have your eyes set on, at least I did, I have to have my eyes set on a goal. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't even start running unless I had my eyes set on a goal. I had to like sign up for a race even. The day after I finished my marathon, I was like, I need a break. My body needs a break. I didn't start running again. I didn't go into like maintenance mode. I just took a break. I didn't start running again until I signed myself up for the next race. Which is silly. And then I had to start again, like do couch to 5K. I'm like, are you kidding me? 6 months ago, I ran a marathon. Now I have to start over. Because, you know, it's just this constant thing. And as I connect the dots, like if the race is our calling, the only thing we really can do is set our eyes on Jesus to keep moving through. Because how many of us know life has tribulations? Like sometimes we don't know what's going on. Sometimes we don't know what's happening. Sometimes it's hard. Like the Lord doesn't say it's going to be easy. Sometimes it's really hard. Sometimes we go through stuff. Our family goes through stuff. Oh, that's the worst. People we love go through stuff and we can't do anything about it. You know? But he says, it connects it here, as you're going through these things, keep your eyes on me. Right? It's what gives us perseverance. And, oh, by the way, I don't think that there's a calling. I think that there's many callings. We're called to do things, no doubt about it. But I don't, you know, we might talk about this in part 2. Like, I think our callings are more than one thing, and that makes sense if you put it into this picture. And, okay, so far so good. The Matthew passage, we see a progression of steps. So when we see who he is, he tells us who we are, and then we're called into what we do. That's what happened with Peter. He saw who he was. Jesus reminded Peter of who he was, and then he told Peter what he was going to do. For years, I was counting on it being kind of that progression. And I think that's what kind of got me spun out for some time, why I kept going back to the Lord, like, okay, Lord, now what's my vision? Now what's my vision? Okay, God, I think I got it. You're my vision. I got it. But now what's next? Okay, I got that one. And it's like, nope, I'm your vision. Jesus. Right? Because I felt like it was going to be more. I'm pretty linear guy. Like, I don't know what side of the brain that is, but I'm pretty like, you know, structured, linear. And I was thinking, well, Peter, he said who he was. He said who you were. You said who he was, and then he did the things he was supposed to do, right? But what I've realized in my life is it's much more fluid than that, right? And then things actually are in parallel. I actually once upon a time spoke a message about this idea of Jesus is our vision being that precursor to launch us into the things that we are called to do. And I realized that, yes, that is part of it, but that's not the whole. It's actually the precursor to launch us into the things that we were supposed to do. And then it stays the main point. It doesn't go away, right? Which is silly because, of course, Jesus is always going to be our vision. And I think it's actually really good news to me. I feel like right now in my life, I've kind of stepped into what I felt like was a major calling. I told you this story 28 years ago, the Lord was calling me into ministry. And I feel like I've stepped into that as part of what I'm doing even here today. But thank God, this isn't the only calling in my life. Right? I used to think one day when I finally get there, then things will be good. Then things will be whole, like a harmonious thing in my life. I'll be satisfied, you know? And I am, but I'm like, things get hard. I'm probably not going to stay there. And someday I'm not going to be a pastor. Probably. Someday I'll probably do something else. And thank God that we have many callings, because otherwise I'd be done. I don't want to ever be done. Like, I want to move from the one thing to the next. You know what I'm saying? And I realized, good night, we can't take our eyes off Jesus in the middle of it. We can't take our eyes off Jesus. We haven't arrived. Has anybody here arrived? I don't know. Maybe you've arrived. I know, like, I resonate with Paul. Like, I haven't arrived yet, that's for sure. I thought that was all interesting. I want to tie back quickly to Proverbs 29:18. That's the verse I read earlier. Where there is no vision, the people perish. Actually, I think if you look at the translation of that, it's actually talking about where there's prophetic over people's lives, where you have that type of a vision. But it goes on to say, but he that keepeth the law, happy is he. Well, we know we can't keep the law, right? Anybody keep the law? Can keep the law? We all know that, right? Nobody can keep the law. All have fallen short of the glory of God. Like, nobody. Actually, the law was created to show that we couldn't keep the law. Literally, the Bible says the law was created so that we know we'd need Jesus. And he fulfilled the law. Oh, let's read it like that. Where there is no vision, the people perish. But he that fulfilled the law, happy is he. That's kind of cool. Oh, it's actually that Jesus is my vision. Where there's no vision, the people perish. But he that keeps his eyes fixed on Jesus, happy is he. I rewrote it. That's my translation. It's not approved by the I don't know, whoever approves translations. It's not available yet by Zondervan or whoever publishes, but it may be. But like, it was really cool to me when I saw that. Jesus fulfilled the law. So even all the way back in Proverbs, it's, you know, I think that there's a connection there to when we have our eyes on Jesus as our vision, as the one who kept the law, fulfilled the law, then we can really walk in happiness, which we all know is an emotion, right? But more contentment and joy, right? Okay, I thought that was cool. All right, so back to our calling. I just want to, I think, as we talk about this, our River Life Wilmington vision, and as we talk about people that are activated into their callings, I wanted to set a foundation for that as Jesus is our calling. In our church, in this body, that's what we want to be about. We want to be about launching people into their callings, who is Jesus. About directing people to Jesus. I think there's a part two of that that says we also get to do things. We'll talk about that maybe sometime soon. You know, Ephesians, where it says that we were created to do wonderful things, the good things of God. Good things, plural, not singular. Like, we're called to do things, but we are mostly called, primarily called, to keep our eyes on Jesus. And I just want to encourage us with that. I think it's something that, for me, I work a day job, like, in, as I mentioned before, software. And we work with, you know, believers, not believers. I work with customers who are not great all the time. And some customers are really nice. And then I work with people who are just mean. I work with people who are angry people. You know, I got to do things like budget. And I got to do things like hit on my goals. You know, I got to wake up and go to work. Like, you know,
some of you have similar experiences. Like, there's stuff in this life we have to do. There's things in this life that we all are doing. And not all of that feels like maybe our calling, you know. Getting our oil changed doesn't necessarily feel like a calling. But as we walk through life, I'm just encouraged to just keep my eyes on Jesus and remind myself of, regardless of what phase of life I'm in, regardless of how easy or hard my life is, regardless of what city I'm in, Jesus is my vision. Because that's like, come on, that's every day. Every day we can go to the bank with that. You know, every day we can hold on to that in the middle of when things are hard, when things are great. When we don't know what to do, we can do that. We can do Jesus is my vision. I can do that every day. I'm not saying it's always easy. I'm just saying. Does that make sense? So I just wanted to set some foundation there. I think next time we talk, we're going to talk a little bit about, I say we because I really want Mary to talk a little bit about it. She doesn't know this yet, actually. True story. I'm going to see if she'll do a part of the message. It'll be fun. Y'all pray she says yes. But we want to talk a little bit about more about callings, you know, what happens in your life, how we can pursue our calling. And I might talk a little bit about Joshua in the middle of that. And Michael and I were talking about Joshua and Caleb the other day. I might talk a little bit about how Joshua, the way he fulfilled his calling was he soaked in the presence for a long time. So I don't want to give away my message, but maybe it'll whet your appetite and you want to come back to hear it. How's that sound?
Thank you for listening to a River Life Fellowship podcast. To get more information, check out riverlifefellowship.com.